up for talking nonsense.
Who's up for talking nonsense?
I'm the American Jezebel.
This is the Greasy Rapidian.
Here we are talking some more nonsense.
Yep, sitting orthogonal and...
Oh, what was the new thing that you... Oh.
Lesbian.
No.
Oh,
no.
The other one?
Why am I drinking my coffee this morning?
Yeah, so... The American Jezebel has told you, our readers.
Our readers?
That's what I always say, and you've never noticed all these.
Oh, really? That you've always called them the readers?
Yes. I was like, wow, at no point did she say, why do you keep calling them our readers?
Okay.
Maybe one of our readers will call in. Anyway, so she's told our readers that I like to make up things. And I was just talking.
Well, you've just made up lots of things on the podcast. It's less me telling people than you just pitching your made up ideas.
I know, but it could have just slid by if you hadn't pointed it out that I said subtle and lesbian. And those things could have slid by if you had not pointed that out to our readers.
Oh.
And so yesterday I'm talking to my brother man. And we're talking about this or that. It's a long story how we got onto it. But I was like, oh, well, yeah, you can do this and this and this. And yeah, after you take care of your AMBM. And he was like, my AMBM? And I was like, yeah, you know your AMBM. He's like, what's an AMBM? And I said, well, that's your morning poo.
So a new thing you're trying to get started is...
Yeah.
Your AMBM.
Yeah, people get up, they have a cup of coffee, and then they go, ooh, time for my AMBM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just like lesbians, this one's really going to take off. maybe a better chance of taking off.
I think they all have...
Because I think it's a fairly universal experience.
People might disagree,
but I think it's something that unites us all.
I think it is pretty... pretty standard practice as a human being.
Yeah, I think so.
So,
you know?
Yeah. And then
we
can all come
together around the quality of our AMBMs.
Well, I don't think we have to talk about our...
No, but it
but we can talk
connects
about
us all.
The need.
In a way that we don't have to discuss. But...
Right. That we all share. I think after the State of the Union address, we're trying to look for unity in this country.
Yeah.
And what unifies us?
There are always those reporters like looking for those unity stories.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I think there's... An AMBM story would unify this country.
Let's call some of these 2020 candidates already. You know, they're like, we are going to unify this country. We are not about the division. You know what unifies us?
AMBM.
Yeah.
We need a theme song for AMBM.
Oh, no, we don't. It's not coming back. It's not a recurring thing.
Kevin McLeod.
It is not recurring.
Write us an AMBM.
An original piece.
If you're here for talking nonsense,
clearly that's what is already happening.
We're like full on again.
You clicked on this episode because you were like, oh good, it's going to be another like real discussion of a movie. This was a serious film, so it's going to be another serious discussion. And then you just had to start skipping through the first couple of minutes.
Well, if you're a first time reader, you're like, really, what's the talking nonsense? They're like reviewing movies. So
yeah.
What could be the talking nonsense?
Why is it called talking nonsense?
And you just got a heaping helping right there.
There you go. Oh, okay.
All right. Well, this week.
Bring it back around.
This episode.
Yes.
Episode 14.
14.
14. And so we are just absolutely hitting our stride. No music. Agree to disagrees.
No, agree to disagrees because, I think the fact that the last few weeks we've had no agree to disagrees, I think really means that, you know, we have just perfected in 14 episodes. It took us a couple episodes early on. We had some real agree to disagrees. We had some fundamental. We had some people writing in because they were mad about our opinions. But, you know, I think that we've really, in 14 episodes, perfected the criticism.
Stay away from Jim Carrey, I guess.
Yeah.
That's the message.
There it is. I mean, should we just wrap it all up now and give ourselves an award and leave? Because we've done it. We've perfected it. There's nothing to disagree with on any of this.
What are the awards for podcasting? What are the potties?
That is a good question. I
oh,
think...
back to AMBM, the potty awards. Wait, no.
Sponsored by like Metamucil or something.
Sponsored by Poopery.
Oh, that, yeah, that's definitely the sponsor.
Okay, well, let's just throw them in right now. Future sponsor. Poopery. All right, so the Greasy Rapidian has started a new job, and in the employee restroom at my new job, there is a large bottle of Poopery.
A large bottle?
A large.
How large do they make bottles of Poopery?
Well, they make the one like the regular
like 16
size,
ounces?
And then they make like a double size of that.
Okay.
And so there's both of them on the little shelf right there by the toilet.
Uh-huh.
And there's the little bottle and there's the big bottle. And then somebody has done on a printable tape, they've printed out little messages. Poopery. Love it. Use it. Sell it.
Sell it?
Yes. That's what it says right next to
it. Is it carried at your new job?
It is carried at my new job.
Wow. So you could sell people Poopery.
Yeah, I believe that would be aisle 22.
Oh.
But it could
be aisle 14. A fun Easter egg for the readers.
It could be aisle 14.
To figure out where there might be a place that aisle 14 or aisle 22 carries Poopery.
Yeah, it might be aisle 14 because that's where the plungers and toilet seats are.
So you're really learning, you're still in the process of learning where the Poopery is because no one's asked for it yet.
Nobody has asked when I said, what can I help you find? Well, I've got this situation with my boyfriend.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
well, there's... Wow. A good product, a better product, and the best product.
Mm.
I recommend Poopery.
Wow. Is that what they taught you to do?
That was in my training video.
Wow. We all just had like a free sales training here.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I'm loving my new job, though.
Nice.
So in case somebody has figured out
what congrats to the Greasy Rapidian on his new job.
Loving it. Just having the best time. This is like talking nonsense live.
Mm.
So people come in and I just talk some nonsense with them,
mm-hmm.
which is one of my superpowers, as it turns out. Anyway, are we going to talk about a movie?
Yes, we
are. So we have a future sponsor. Thanks, Poopery, for future
Thank
sponsoring.
Thank you for sponsoring us.
And this week, this episode 14, we watched Moonlight.
We did, yes.
Yeah. So before you read to me,
uh-huh.
I had not seen this movie.
Yeah, this is a whole trilogy of movies, of new movies for you.
This is, mm-hmm. yeah. This is like revealing a blind spot in my movie watching canon.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm filling that blind spot in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to shout out to Amber Ruffin.
Some people were like, what? And I was like, oh, what?
Oh, we love you, Amber. Again, call us about this alarm clock idea, because I'm very serious about this. Let's make this happen.
Let's make this alarm. I would carry it. Aisle 4.
What aisle is the alarm clock?
The alarm clocks might be like aisle 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amber, we will carry it in this place.
Yeah.
The Greasy Rapidian will get it, get it in all their stores.
I would put it on an end cap.
Mm.
On aisle 4. So
definitely.
One of the first things you
we
saw coming in the
store. We could get a life-size cardboard cutout of
Absolutely.
Amber in the uh-huh. aisle.
Amber oh. says, what can I help you find? What are you here for today?
Oh, yes. Oh. Really, seriously, Amber, call us about this idea. I know you got a new show. Congratulations. We're following your career.
Yeah.
It's super exciting, but also get this side hustle alarm clock going.
We are championing you.
Mm-hmm.
We are championing you.
Yeah. So shout out to Amber, as always.
I think we almost have to say,
what?
I did not see this movie, so this is The Greasy Rapidian Says What? Is this movie about? I have not seen this movie. And I know a couple things about it. I know that it won the Best Picture in the infamous La La Land debacle. And I think that the characters are African-American. I think they're down in the South. And I think it's the story of a young African-American man growing up and coming to terms with his father and his sexuality. And I think that his father is kind of a hyper-masculine man and does things to make him manly. And then in the end, it doesn't change him. It only embitters him to his father. And we see three vignettes of this main character, the protagonist's life, as he awakens to it, struggles with it, and then comes to terms with it. I'm going to guess that it's going to be hard. It's not going to be a soft movie.
Nailed it.
100%. Yep. Yep. You knew exactly what this was about.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you weren't entirely wrong.
I wasn't.
You had some really fundamental details of it, right?
Yeah, which makes me think that there were things floating around.
I think so. Definitely.
That I maybe caught on to somehow that mm-hmm. I didn't actually mm-hmm. consciously know, but I unconsciously, because, yeah, there were some of those things I could not have known unless I had heard some way. And so I think mm-hmm. I had heard things about. So, but then I missed fundamentally about the rest of the story.
Yes.
So, all right. So what did...
So I mean, you just completely 100% perfectly predicted what the movie was going to be about. But say that you had a couple of those details wrong.
Yeah.
I am going to go ahead and read you what, if you were to just Google this movie.
Just
you're
to
like,
go
oh,
on the
I
interweb,
think,
right?
I think I'm just going on the web and I'm going to see, do I want to watch this movie? Let me read the description that comes up when I look this movie up.
Okay.
So this is the description of Moonlight. A look at three defining chapters in the life of Chiron, a young black man growing up in Miami. His epic journey to manhood is guided by the kindness, support, and love of the community that helps raise him. If you read that description, would you have a very different idea of what this movie was about than it is?
Yeah.
Who is the community that raises him in this movie?
And loves him?
Yeah.
Ooh.
The support that he gets? I think they specifically said the support.
Ooh.
The kindness, support, and love of the community that raises him.
Kindness.
Does there is the what? What? I think whoever wrote the internet description of this movie 100% did not see this movie and maybe confused it with an entirely different film. The first sentence is correct.
The first sentence is correct.
Because it is three defining chapters in his life.
He
is a young black man growing up in Miami.
Yep.
That is true. But the second part is just entirely false.
Huh. I wonder what movie they watched.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a nice movie to watch.
Well, I'm thinking, what movie is that, right?
Yeah. That clearly they just took the second sentence from a description of a different film.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. A heartwarming film about a community coming together to collectively raise a child.
During hard times.
Oh, you know what it is? The Odd Life of Timothy Green. That's what that movie is.
I don't know.
It's about a boy who's made out of sticks. How did this get made? Reviewed it. And everybody works at a pencil factory. It's a ludicrous movie, apparently. And they all come together around this boy made of sticks that grew out of the ground. So I think they took the description from The Odd Life of Timothy Green and put it on Moonlight. Because that is not what the movie is about.
If you watch this movie to see that movie, you would be...
That is some false advertising.
Wow. They just missed.
Yeah. Because some of the other ones, you know, so I feel like most of the descriptions we've read, they generally are getting at what the movie is about. That is just absolutely wrong. There's kindness and love and support from a couple of people in the
movie. Star by far, as they will
yes.
come later.
Yes.
But they're very brief.
They are. Because really, a few of them we only see in either one or two chapters of the whole thing. And it's individuals. It is not a community.
It is not a community. It's individuals. And had not the rest of his life been so unkind, so unsupported.
Yes.
So unloving.
Right.
You might not have even recognized these other events.
Yeah.
Because these events only stand out because the other stuff is so bleak.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And really, the movie is more about someone who's growing up with an utter lack of love, kindness, and support from their community and people that they really need to love, support, and be kind to them. That's really much more what the movie's about.
It is what's much more what the movie's about. Wow.
So I feel slightly sorry for anybody who reads that description and then goes in thinking that's what the movie's going to be about.
Okay, well, that's just, at this point, there's nothing more to be said than
no.
It's just plain wrong.
It is.
We can't even agree to disagree
no.
on that.
No, because, I guess we could, given the origins of agree to disagree.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's just disagree on facts.
Yeah.
So
let's actually move to
what would you say that this movie is about?
Okay, and I don't want to lose this thought, so I'm going to pop it out here now, because I hadn't had this thought until you read the first part of that description, saying this is three chapters from his life. And obviously it was very clear in the movie, chapter one, Little, chapter two, Chiron, I would say, but I think they say Chiron.
Chiron, yeah.
Yeah, because Chiron is the centaur, the Greek centaur, right? And so I was like, oh, well, he's Chiron, the centaur, because he's in between man and beast.
Okay.
Right. And so uh-huh. I thought they purposely named him that in the movie to kind of be that analogy or that metaphor.
Well, and maybe they did, and then, you know, just they shifted just, that a little bit in terms yeah. of the how yeah. you say his name.
So perhaps. Maybe. And so mm-hmm. that's chapter two, and then mm-hmm. chapter three is black. But when you read the description, I just went, oh, because I recently read the book Homegoing, which is kind of the same setup, that there's chapters, and it's not one person's life, but it's a family. And so two sisters are separated long ago, you know, hundreds of years ago, and one family stays in Africa and one family comes to America. And then you just see one chapter out of one person in each successive generation. And so you're seeing them kind of parallel until they get a little bit off, and then they don't parallel anymore. And then at the end, they line up again. But you don't see everything about that person's life. You just see kind of one little vignette that illuminates the whole of their life in that little vignette. And so incredibly well written, just ridiculous. And I can't pronounce the author's name, but just fantastic. And it's the same kind of setup and the same kind of structure. And so when you said that, I was like, oh, I hadn't thought of it last night when we were watching the movie, but the movie reminded me so much of the book. Every part of it, the tone of it, the structure of it, the everything about it was very, very similar. And so I don't know if this is now kind of a rising genre.
What would you call this genre then?
Yeah, I'm stuck to create something, right?
Yeah.
Because this is actually serious. This is nonsense, like
creation.
The
yes,
other stuff that
yes.
I create, which is always just nonsense.
But that they share, but that either, and it can be a written work or a film, but they share some similarities in tone, similarities in structure, and how they're telling stories.
Right, and I think that the key is that you can take, so like, obviously in Moonlight, it was about one man's life, and then in Homegoing, it was about a family's life, and that you could take one piece, and so you can say, okay, here's, I don't know how long chapter one, Little, is, but I'm guessing it's a month or two. It's not a lot of his youth. Chapter two,
it's like a couple days.
A couple days or a week at most.
Yeah.
It is not.
He wears
long.
The same outfit the whole time, basically.
Yeah, but that could be other reasons.
Yeah, yeah. But you kind of, you see, yeah, I think it's, yeah, a couple days to a week, yeah.
Yeah, it's a week at most.
Yeah.
And then the last one, maybe a week at most as well, right? It could be a couple weeks because he does go for a drive, but it could be a couple weeks, but it's not much. But in that little bit, you get a whole sense of what has happened since the last time you saw him, right? And it's not really explicit, but you can just piece together all these things that have probably now led him to be where he is. And that's the same thing that happens in the homegoing, that you see just like a little piece of their life. It may be just, you know, of a generation. It may be a couple months, it may be a couple years, but it's not somebody's entire, you know, 70 years. And then that defines that generation, and everything is in there. And so it's almost like, you know, if I had to say what kind of genre it is, it's like potentized liminality. That you are really like saying, here's what the struggle was to become in this generation. Here's what the struggle was to become in this generation. And that's kind of the same with him, right?
Yeah, but just in different parts of his own life.
Correct.
Uh-huh. Yeah, at this stage, right, when he's like 9, and then when he's like 17, and then when he's like 30-something.
It's compacted. It is really, really high intensity. And so I like that. So I don't know what that genre is, but it seems like it's coming up again and again, and I think we'll start to recognize it in other things, we being us as a culture. And I would suggest, because both of them are obviously stories of, you know, African or African immigrants or African Americans, or, you know, a Cuban, black Cuban in this story, you know, the one mentor to him. But it tends to, I would say, so far both of them have been black stories,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm just going to put that in a big umbrella because it's going to be all these different things. It's not necessarily African American.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And I wonder if that is where it's coming from. And so I don't know the answer, because it'll be one of my questions later on when we talk about rating the movie. And then I'll come back to this.
Okay,
again.
Let's come back to this question.
Right.
Yeah, and it would be interesting. I know. Now I'm really interested in looking to see if there are other, you know, examples of this kind of storytelling. If this is like been something that people have been doing, and I think in some ways they have, but how has this kind of evolved as, you know, that kind of what you're saying, the potent vignettes of here's this moment or this like small window in time that illuminates this like broader things in this person's life or in this family's life or in this generation. Yeah, I wonder what other examples. This is a serious shout out to people, to our readers,
right,
to come up with maybe some. I would honestly love to hear if people have other examples of this kind of storytelling.
And just as like a casual survey,
uh-huh.
I would say, you know, so I'm saying the two examples, and so it's, you know, not statistically significant.
Yes.
We're just two, but like I can think like two examples if I say, okay, so what is kind of the trend of white reflection, if you will? Uneducated?
Oh, educated.
Educated, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, the memoir that came out this last year.
Or uh-huh. Hillbilly Elegy. And it's a very different tone. It's kind of like the counter, and you can see the different way that both kind of trying to investigate the same issues, but how one does it as opposed to the other, you know. And I know that you are specifically interested in this idea around how does white culture kind of define itself at this point. And so if I'm suggesting that this is black culture kind of reflecting and defining who it is and how it came to be who it is, and then the other one is white culture kind of in some ways, right? And not the, again, it's like, you know, the victors write the history, but luckily now so many people can write and produce, etc. And, you know, it's one of the great things about the internet, you know, a couple of knuckleheads like us can have a podcast.
Yeah, nobody's gonna
people that
pay
really,
us for this, yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. But people that really have a vision and a voice and have a message can actually make it heard.
Yeah.
And so we're starting to see the non-victors story of history. And that's starting to come out. And I think in both of those examples, you know, the educated and Hillbilly Elegy.
Yeah.
You know, you can say, well, that's white, but it's the non-victor whites.
Yes.
And then these other ones, they're not the predominant, the dominant culture of this country. And they get to have their story told as well. But they're very different in how they're told. And I don't know if that's universal or if it's just unique to these small
that these
examples.
These are the examples that we're coming up with.
Correct.
I know. We should come back around to this. We should keep thinking about this idea because I think it is really interesting. You know, we've been connecting all of these sort of liminal space movies and kind of connecting them through that through line. But I think it'd be interesting to kind of trace that in maybe some of the future things that we look at, or, you know, we're always bringing in other things that we've been consuming in the culture. Yeah, I think we should come back around to this idea and see if we see some more examples of this, or if we see maybe something that complicates this idea too.
And the readers,
shout us
out.
Please do. Yes.
Yeah, because this is actually a serious call out.
It is. Yeah, it absolutely is. And I do, like, I would love to hear from people if anybody has some perspective on this or some ideas around this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How would they contact us?
That's a great question. You can email us at AmericanJezebel.GreasyRapidian@gmail.com. You can also tweet at us. We now have 4 Twitter followers.
Shout out to the 4.
Yes, thank you to our 4 Twitter followers at American Jezebel. Or you could send us a message or give us a follow on Instagram at American_Jezebel. So you can find us across the social media platforms.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So yeah. Back to the actual
back
movie.
Back to the movie. Yes.
So the movie does take three parts.
Yes.
And him as a young man, him as a teenager, and then...
Him as an adult.
Him as an adult. So, like, I should say as a boy. Him as a boy, him as a young man, and then him as a man.
He does grow up in Miami.
He grows up in Miami.
Yes.
And it's not a love and kindness, and he struggles with who he is.
Yes. I would say that's one of the central theses of the movie. And I think there's a couple of places where that's really illuminated. I think that is one of the questions that the movie is asking him, and that different characters ask him through the movie, right? Who is you? Is one of the questions. I mean, they ask other people as well, but I think they're fundamentally asking him.
The first guy, Juan, is that his name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I couldn't quite hear him. And then when they would say his name, I was like, are they calling him Juan? So Juan. He actually says at that one point, he said, one time I was running crazy through the streets and the woman called me Blue, right? And he said, is that your name? He said, no, you get to choose who you are. So he says it very early to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he says it to him in a couple different ways too then, because later they have the conversation when he comes over to the house and he asks him, what is a faggot? And then Juan says, you'll know who you are. You know, it's another way of addressing that same question too. Yes.
And it's really lovely because then Teresa, the girlfriend of Juan, says, he's like, when will I know? You'll know when you know, baby.
Mm-hmm. And they said, you don't have to know now.
You're too young to know.
Yeah. Now. I mean, there's so many great scenes in that first part that I really love. Yeah. So, and then the second part is him as a teenager. And then the third part is him as an adult and the things that he's doing as an adult. And then coming back to some of those characters that we saw earlier on that he hasn't seen in quite a while either. Are there some scenes or some particular themes you want to talk about from the movie? And especially because you hadn't seen it before.
I had not seen it before.
Yeah. So what are some of the scenes or the themes that struck you from the movie?
Well, so contrary to what the interweb says this movie is about, this is not an easy movie to watch.
Mm-mm.
Because there is not kindness and caring and love and support of a community.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a little bit of, wow, at any point is anything good going to happen to him? Because he does have in the beginning a little bit of good when Juan comes into his life. But then it's one of the things about that kind of potentized liminality. We're not sure what happened to Juan.
We know he died, but we don't know anything else.
We know he died, but... Yes, that's it, right? It's not a big scene. It's not a big drama. It's not, he's just gone. And so there's a lot of that where you go, wow, what happened? Like, it seemed like his mom was a nurse.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, she's a crack addict.
Uh-huh.
And you go, what happened? And so there's a lot of that where you're not really clear
mm-hmm.
how the progression has happened. And so when at the end of the movie, I was a little bombarded. it's a rough one, right? And I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, it's not like any particular scene. This is what it would be like to be in a liminal space for 25 years.
Yeah.
And so that's what I had. It wasn't like there was like a key scene, because it was just one scene after another. And there wasn't like a whole big setup to a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All of a sudden we see him in school, and another kid in the class is just going off on him. There's no setup. We don't know their relationship, and we just have no idea. But all of a sudden it happens. And then he leaves there and he goes home. And then his mom is just crazy. And there's no setup to that, like how it got to that point. You know, and it's just like one scene after another like this. Even when he goes to the beach and then his friend Kevin comes and joins him at the beach. I'm not sure how Kevin found him.
Well, Kevin apparently is there. That's his spot. And they just happen to run into each other.
I guess, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and so there's not a whole lot of setup to that. And so it's just like one scene after another where there's not a whole lot of setup, and you're required to try to figure it out on your own,
mm-hmm.
the viewer.
Yeah.
You are required to make the connections and try to figure things out. And I go, in some way, we as a viewer are in a liminal space with this movie, because
mm-hmm.
it's really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And I think another reason, I think that's totally true. And then I think another reason that it is in some ways such a hard movie to watch too, is because it is kind of like this liminal space that he's always in. And then I always felt like moment to moment, like, thing, you didn't really know like how people were going to react, how people were going to be, that I always felt like he was a little bit like, there were instances where, you know, if he went with Juan, you know, who's the stranger, like things could have gone well or they could have gone terribly, that because he didn't have explicitly what the description says, which is a community and support and kindness and love, that he's like constantly like tentatively reaching out sometimes for those things, and then learning either hard lessons about doing that or like being supported in some way, and you just never really know which way it's gonna go or which way he's gonna be treated by people. Even like his interactions with like his bully, you know, sometimes they like beat the hell out of him, and then sometimes they just kind of rough him up and are really like verbally assault him, and then are just like, see ya, and then walk away. And he's just in this constant space of navigating these like small dangers and small interactions, like how is his mom gonna be, how are these bullies gonna be, how, you know, he's just in this constant state of like navigating these small dangers. And I think that makes the movie really like a hard one to watch, because you never relax and say, because he never gets to relax, you know, there's never, except when he's at Juan and Teresa's house, which is the places that we see him like sleeping and like waking up and being like, oh, I'm in this kind of like little space where I don't have to be watchful and I don't have to be worried and I don't have to do that kind of navigation that he has to do at every other moment in the movie. And so I think that's what, like, you're kind of on a little bit on edge the whole time, because you just don't know like what those situations are going to present, and there isn't like a level of comfort or support at any point really, aside from when he's, you know, in Juan and Teresa's house. Like even in his own place at the end, when he's with the kid counting the money, and he kind of makes him be in that space of like, you don't know, is this gonna, am I gonna really mess with you right now, are things gonna go bad, and you just don't really know like moment to moment what the how things will turn out. And then in that case they diffuse the situation, but it might not have been, you know, it's this constant alertness that he has to be at even when he's a kid. So I think that's one of the reasons it makes it kind of that, the intensity of that watching experience too.
No, I think at the end of the movie, Kevin says to him, so you got hard. And he kind of did, because that's how he was with that kid, because he says it to him. You can't be on the corner if you can't take it.
Exactly.
I was just messing with you.
And he's trying to teach him that same lesson.
He's trying to make him hard.
Exactly.
I know, because
otherwise, and that's why the ending,
if you're not hard, we saw what happened.
And we assume maybe something happened with Juan too, because we don't know. You can project that onto that situation as well. And that's why, like, the ending, like, that's why I think the ending is so beautiful, because it's the first time where, like, in the movie, he's like being held really, like really held by somebody else. And that he's, you know, and you see the way, you can see like physically the way he's built himself to be hard. And the image that he now projects to the world. And that at the end, like, you know, it's just this like incredibly tender moment of him just cradling him. And he doesn't, he's actually being like supported by somebody else. He's actually being like held by somebody else. And that's why the ending is just like so tender, because it's the only time, that's the first time in the movie that that happens.
He even says when they're in the house, "You're the only man that's ever touched me. And nobody has touched me since you touched me." You could take it to be sexual, but I took it literally.
I think so. Because there's also plays like when he gets beat up and the woman is telling him he needs to press charges and she tries to kind of comfort him. He moves away from her. He doesn't want her to touch him. Yeah, I don't think he lets people touch him. I took that pretty literally as well. Yeah, and I think that it also is sexual, but I think that it's pretty literal that people haven't touched him. And I think that's why that last image is of that kind of touch, because that's the kind of touch that he needs and that he so clearly craves through the movie too. And I think that like that, just like the expressions that the three different people who play him, they just have, well, they have a couple of different looks that are very specific that, you know, even though they don't necessarily, none of the three iterations of each of Kevin or Chiron like looks exact, like they look exactly the same. But they kind of have a couple of different looks that they have. And there's both this kind of like, they have a look of like, I'm just like blank behind the eyes because I'm not letting anything come through here, or like I'm not going to let anything out. And then there's the I'm letting everything out. They have this like look of such intense longing sometimes too. And so I think he does both of those things too, of that veil of I'm not letting anything out, and then just like opening up like in his expression so much desire for that connection and that longing and that tenderness and that love that he doesn't have in so many parts of it. And you know, that's a thing that I think it's kind of characteristic of this filmmaker too, that there's so much of the people looking straight into the camera. And I think so much of it comes through, you know, we talked about interiority with the Call Me By Your Name, right? And I think that this is, you know, even more successful when it comes to that, because even in just those two different ways that he looks at the camera, or he looks at Kevin, or he looks at other people in the movie, you just see kind of those two ways that he's navigating being, of either holding absolutely everything in, or you see the glimpses of how much he's longing for something, what a well there is inside of him. And then you just get a glimpse of that in his face. So, and I think that he does use like the camera looking right at, you know, looking, having the actors look straight into the camera as a way to kind of like bring those in. So it was not an easy one to watch.
It was not an easy one to watch. I did not like Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah, we don't have to get back. We don't have to get into it.
Right. And so, but I'm just going to say that, like this one, it had all the same qualities of Call Me By Your Name. It was like you were saying, like this interiority of the movie, and also the physicality of the movie and the cinematography of the movie, right? And so like you were saying, like when he curls away from that woman, her voice disappears. The focus of the camera changes, you know, and so you see him clearly, but everything behind him kind of fades away. And then he does pull away from her, and you just go, that was a great shot. And there was just, even when he's confronted on the street by those two guys, right, and they have that back and forth, after they leave, he kind of does like this posturing and pumping up, like he's gonna come back on him, you know. And so you're not sure if like he just wants to look good for the people they've seen, or this is something that's trying to come out of him, you know. And so a lot happens in that scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
That in that physicality of it, and we talked about that with
Timothée Chalamet.
Timothée.
Yes.
Chalamet. Uh-huh. You know, that we would see these physicality of his acting. You know, and so just ridiculous, the acting in this movie, and the directing and the cinematography. I mean, just incredible.
The light in this movie is crazy. It's incredible. So beautiful. Even the fluorescence, like when they're in the school and everything's fluorescent.
Oh, that after he gets beat up and he goes to school the next day.
Yeah.
And you can just feel that sense of, as he opens one door after another, right? And you can just feel it building, and it's incredible. because nothing is sad. And you can just feel the tension building and building and building. And even then, when he goes into the class, like you were saying earlier, you're never sure how things are going to go. And so you're not sure, is he just going to sit down? What's going to happen? And so you're never sure how any, but you have this sense through the filmmaking that something's going to happen because of how well that scene is kind of laid out. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And it's just a beautiful movie.
Yeah. The other thing is somebody this past week mentioned American Beauty to me and, you know, how that was this movie, blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, my God, have you seen the movie recently?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they were like, that won that Academy Award. That was a great movie. And I was like, really? You know, and so I was kind of, what Academy Award winning movie did I talk about before this one?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, whatever about the Academy. It's all politics and et cetera, et cetera. And of course, this was an Academy Award winning movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I loved La La Land. It was great fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, you know, I'm not sure what Moonlight was about, but maybe it was just like an Academy politicking thing.
Mm-hmm. That it won over La La Land.
Yeah, uh-huh. And that they were like, let's do this for public relations purposes.
Uh-huh. And now, having seen it.
Yeah, it was a great movie.
You can maybe see why it did win over La La Land.
It shouldn't have even been a question. There should have been no, like Warren Beatty should have said, hold on a second. This
Are
card is clearly wrong.
I'm sorry. I am Warren Beatty and I am personally changing it. Let me pull a pen out of my suit. Let me just scratch this out.
Yep.
Are you serious? Who are you kidding over here?
This is clearly not the right card. And then fling it David Letterman style.
Moonlight, get up here. Barry Jenkins, you won this one.
Yep.
Damien Chazelle, sit down. Sit down, Damien.
Yep. So,
you'll win for something else, man.
When I was, you know, at the end of the movie, I was like, that was an Academy Award winning movie.
Yeah. It's even kind of hard to describe like how beautiful the movie is. You know, I don't know. There's some qualities to the light, to the cinematography, to the way that he's shooting. And I don't know anything about the specifics of like movie making. But like the colors and the light and all of the things that he was doing is just, cause even thinking about La La Land, you can see the ways that like Damien Chazelle played with color and how he costumed people and how he shot all of that. And that's pretty clear because that's what he was trying to do. And this one is like, you know, so much more naturalistic in the way that it's doing it, but there is like such a quality to the light and to the color in a way that's naturalistic, but it's so intense at the same time, you know? And I think, you know, part of that too is like where they shoot things, you know? So they did shoot it in Liberty City in Miami, which is where both the director and the guy who wrote the play that then he adapted into the screenplay, they both grew up in that place. So they shot it there as well. So I think there's a lot of specificity in that as well.
But also, like, Call Me by Your Name, we were like, oh, that was beautifully done. But it was like a typical, you know, it was kind of pastoral and these, you know, beautiful nature scenes, except, you know. And so you go, yeah, but you're exactly right on this one. Like, you can just think scene after scene, the scene when he comes home from Teresa's and his mom is trying to get money from him.
Yeah.
It's not like this really clever technique. It's really thoughtful how the scene is shot, and you feel this kind of pressure from the mom. And so you as an audience member are feeling the tension of the mom pressing in on you and the urgency and the impending tragedy that's going to happen. And it all comes from how it's shot, and it really does give that sense.
But it doesn't feel... It doesn't feel like he's showing off what he can do.
No.
That the ways that he's using that camera work and is specifically in service of building that feeling, as opposed to being like, look at this cool shot I can do. Even one that I love, which is the scene where Juan teaches him to swim, which, you know, it's so beautiful, but again, not in a way that's like, look at how beautiful it is, but even like the flecks of water on the camera and how like how in the water the camera is, and you just feel that movement of the water because the camera is flowing with the water, right? And you're like at the level of him like dipping back into the water, and it's just so beautiful and immersive in the way that he shoots it, without it being like, look at how beautiful and immersive this is,
right?
Yeah.
And also the complexity of it, because the water was really dirty.
Yeah.
You know, there were flotsam and jetsam going by. Like, I was like, oh, there was some trash that just went by.
Yeah.
Right? And so it wasn't like, oh, this is this beautiful moment they have together. It was them being where they are.
Yeah.
And the moment happened despite the environment. It wasn't that this beautiful crystalline water off the coast of Italy where you pulled up these ancient Greek statues then revealed the, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They were in some dirty water off the coast of, you know, Miami somewhere where there's trash and
it's
muck.
Like a styrofoam to go container floats by.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But it still was a beautiful yeah. scene.
And that so much applies to like that idea of complexity comes up, you know, so much through this, right? But even the scene when he talks to Juan and to Teresa, both about like being gay, and they're so, I mean, just that scene is so beautiful because it isn't like, let me give you this big speech about this thing, but he just says like, this is a word used to make gay people feel bad. And that's like this, such a simple, beautiful idea that is not taking away the power of that word and saying, you know, oh, don't worry about it. Like, they're stupid if they say that. Or it's just saying, he's really laying it out for him in like a simple way that both he as a child can understand, and an idea that if he comes back to still makes so much sense. And is, and that, you know, and he says, you might be gay, but you know, you don't have to know right now. And it's such a good conversation. And then it's the last scene we see with Juan, and it's a scene where he walks away from him because Juan is also the person who deals drugs, and his mom does drugs, and that's at the root of so much of his life as a child, and why he has to be the way that he is. So there's so much complexity in this person that he loves, who's also doing things that actively hurt him in the way that his actions reverberate out.
Yeah, there's also a great moment in that scene because he's going to tell him more, remember? And so he says, you know, you don't have to know right now, and know at some point, unless, and then he's going to say something else, and she shakes her head, and then he stops. And
yeah.
It's like, I just go, that's a great scene.
It's so, you know, we're shouting out the filmmaking, but the writing of it is pretty incredible too. Because
the acting is off the charts.
And they say so much with so little too, right? Like he's, you know, he says that he hates his mom. And then Juan says, yeah, I hated my mom too. And now I miss her. I miss her like hell. That's all I'm going to say about it. And those are like three lines, and it's, but there's, they say so much by they don't have to give a big monologue about these things. Everything is, each word is so clearly chosen.
Yeah. So many things about, cause then he said, do you sell the drugs? And you can see he puts his head down,
oh.
Kind of rubbing, you know,
yeah.
He's rubbing his cloth in his head cloth, and he's just like skull cap, you know, he's just like, oh. And he says, yeah. And then he knows what's going to happen, right? But he can't lie to the boy. But he just knows how bad it's going to be, right?
It's such a beautiful and devastating movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it's so hard to watch. It's like a hard, it's not an easy movie to watch.
It's really hard
to watch. But it's also like such a beautiful movie too. You know, you're not like, oh, this is like tragedy porn, right? Of, oh, let's watch how this person suffers. Yeah. That's not what this is either. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, God, and then like the physicality even of like the different people that they cast, and you get such a sense of Kevin as a kid, and then Kevin as a teenager, and then the lessons that adult Kevin learned about being teenage Kevin, you know, and you again, what you're saying about that like potentized storytelling, that you can see like why teenage Kevin would, you don't need to see the places where teenage Kevin does a does some stupid stuff and then learns the lessons of doing that stupid stuff and then makes these changes. And you see like the parallel ways that Chiron and Kevin have made different choices, even though they had similar experiences, right? Of both basically getting locked up and then taking different lessons from that. It's just incredible that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I was always going to say just like the physicality too of Chiron, you know, when he's kind of pumping himself up and think that they so clearly chose like those younger actors for, they are just these little string, he's this little string bean, like tiny kid. He's much smaller than everybody else. And then as a teenager, just this gangly kid with like no meat on his bones. And then you can see then when Trevante Rhodes is Chiron, that he's so clearly like his physical, his body reflects the changes that have happened since we last saw him, and everything about his presentation is different. Oh, but then when he like brushes his hair before he goes into the diner, yeah. There's just so many small moments like that. Oh yeah. That even though he's this new hard Chiron, he's still like putting on the right shirt and brushing his hair. And, and he's still like that, like still got all of that happening underneath. So anyway, oh God. Yeah.
Okay, so we were going to talk some nonsense and pitch a car, but I don't think I'm going to do that.
Okay.
And so I think we should just go to favorite line and star by far.
Okay. You're going to talk about your favorite. You're going to give your favorite line first?
Favorite line. And this part of the show will be sponsored by Against the Grain. Free pizzas. They make three kinds of pesto, a pepperoni, and a cheese. I could eat them every single day.
And almost do.
As it turns out, almost do. So I was eating Against the Grain while I watched this. Future sponsor, Against the Grain Pizzas.
I mean, it would cut your food budget in half if you could get sponsored by Against the Grain Pizzas.
I think I am probably like 10% of their business.
Against the Grain, call us about this. Thank you to our future sponsor, Against the Grain.
Thank you, Against the Grain. Yes, great stuff. All right, so my favorite line. This is my best line of the movie. Her name's Aphrodite. She only come out at night.
There were tiny moments of humor in this movie, for sure. Yes, that's a great line. Yes.
So that's my best line, but also not be funny. It could be very serious.
Which is like again where the complexity comes in.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I did laugh at the line, and then I was also like, I don't know that it was supposed to be funny because it could be that his girl calls herself Aphrodite because she's walking the street or dancing or whatever, and that's why she's only out at night because she's sleeping during the day because she's working all night, and which is a sad thing rather than a humorous thing. But they don't tell you. So that was my best line.
All right. Well, one of mine comes from who I think is just the agent of chaos in the movie, which is his bully Tyrell. And Tyrell is winding up Kevin to get him to then beat up Chiron. And then as he's knocking his food around, and then as he leaves, he really is like, oh, and again, like that scene where he's like walking around and he just is this just like, he's a Chrysler, right? A whirling dervish of energy. You don't know where it's going to land. And you just see him going around and around and around, and you just feel it all building, and you kind of know it's coming at Chiron, but like you don't know, he keeps pushing other people. Oh, it's so good, right? Anyway, but when he's winding up Kevin in the lunchroom and they're talking about, oh, lunch used to be so great, man. And then as he's leaving, he picks up Kevin's grape juice and goes, don't drink that government shit, man. So he takes away his government juice. So that was the other funny line of the movie. So that was my other favorite line.
Star by far?
I mean, there's one who's like the clear, who's not the main character, but is the clearest candidate for Star by Far, who won an Oscar for their performance as this character, which is Juan. Mahershala Ali is, I mean, just incredible in this. Like, his walk and his laugh and his, I mean, he's just incredible in this movie. So I think Juan and Teresa, my favorite too, is that Janelle Monáe, you know, she just, I think in 2016, she just decided I'm going to start acting. And then a year later was in two Oscar nominated movies. She's like, I'll just transition to doing some acting. And then boom, she's in Moonlight and Hidden Figures in the same year. she's whatever she decides to do, she's just going to do super well. So Juan and Teresa, I mean, are some of my more serious stars by far, because they do provide the love and the support and kind of an unconditional love that he doesn't get from his mom, at least through the first two parts, that he so desperately needs in the movie. And I mean, it's hard to find a replacement for that in terms of star by far. My nonsense star by far is the biology teacher. It's just like always trying to explain DNA and nobody will listen to him. And he's just up there in his glasses and his little button down, and he's just like trying to get kids to learn about biology, and they're busy like getting in fights and staring at their other students, and you know, at the biology teacher, he just wants them to learn.
Man, talk about wanting to see it from another perspective.
That biology teacher.
He has to just cry all night long.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
So,
day is just a uphill. He's Sisyphus. He's pushing that rock up the hill every day.
That biology teacher is a hero. He deserves better base salaries.
He does. Yeah, he deserves to be the highest paid public employee in the state.
Forget whoever the coach at like FSU is, because it's got to be a football coach, right?
It does
in Florida.
Have to be. Yeah, yeah. I can't remember.
Take the money from that football coach.
Jimmy Johnston was a coach at Miami.
Yeah, take all of Jimmy's money and give it to that biology teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that biology
None
teacher
of you are
is
leaving
other.
Here until I get an answer.
On what is DNA?
No, I think white
blood
cells.
Oh, it's blood cells. Yeah, it was blood cells. Yeah, DNA was the other day.
Yeah, nothing.
So the biology teacher is my other star by far.
Yeah, that's the who I would want to see this movie from his perspective, because this is not Stand and Delivered.
It is not.
This is not Freedom Riders or whatever.
Yeah.
This is how it looks.
Yes.
Day after day after day for that biology teacher. I just hope somebody doesn't break a chair on another kid's head and then stab him with the legs.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, he goes home. Says, nobody got stabbed today.
Nobody got stabbed today. That was a good day.
Yeah.
Did they answer any of your questions? Not a single one.
I do not think they know what white blood cells are.
Yeah.
But
I'm going to have to agree with you, you know, so we'll just share the star by far. My star by far. I would have chosen Teresa.
Yeah, I wrote down Teresa. Because I think Juan is almost a star of the movie. I almost think we can't choose him as a star by far.
I don't know, because I'm going to say he goes in and he sees what's happening because the kids run by him. And so right away he knows. And so, again, how well it's written. They don't tell you anything about his upbringing, but he has a sense of what's happening right away. He tracks that kid down and he goes, come with me, right? And so he's saying, you know, I'm going to provide for him what nobody provided for me. And then I'm going to make him so that he can survive in this world. I'm going to teach him how to survive in this world. It's kind of what he's doing.
Yeah.
Even though it hasn't worked so well for him, right? But at least I'm surviving and I have somebody that loves me and, you know, there are people that look up to me and I'm not getting chased day after
day. I do like that kid on the corner too. The one who's just like doing his job, you know?
I'm working hard.
Yeah. There was a whole story there that, again, how's your mom doing, you know? And he was just working hard. There are so many little ones like that.
But so he has a clear arc to his.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going with Teresa, though, because like he said, I can't get you to talk about my girl well. Uh-huh. And so she comes and she sits in the car and they just look at each other for quite a while. And so she was really like, I'm just going to be with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's like that a lot with him.
Mm-hmm.
That she's just going to, and she loves him for a long time.
She does.
She does not desert him.
And she doesn't ask anything from him, too.
Nope, she doesn't try to make him something. She doesn't, when he comes, she's like, you need to learn how to make the bed. You can't be having your girl do that. You know.
You're going to do it badly, so Teresa has to come in and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Even then she says, yeah, you and Juan, you're thick as thieves, making Teresa do everything. And then he gets really sad. Oh, it's an incredible scene after incredible scene.
It really is.
And so, but she's just there for him nonstop.
She is. She is a true star by far.
She's a true star by far. Yeah. I'm sure she's there at the end. You
I'm
know,
sure.
Even when he's become Juan.
Because Kevin says he got, you know, his number through Teresa.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're still
in touch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's my star by far.
Yeah, she is amazing in this. Let's talk about our ratings for this movie.
What we watched before.
Oh, and yes, what we watched before. So you kind of had a what I read before.
I did have a what I read before, which was probably more closely aligned with this. It didn't affect, but it was shocking how similar they were, as we talked about earlier.
And what did you watch before?
I watched Russian Dolls because it's the new Natasha Lyonne.
Because now you're a big Natasha Lyonne stan.
I loved her in The Cheerleader. I loved her in Orange is the New Black.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, oh, I'll watch this. And it's kind of addicting right away because she's super gruff, gravelly voiced New Yorker.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're kind of like, oh, this is kind of fun. But then it just, it's like string theory, right? If I just create enough threads, maybe somebody will go, oh yeah, that makes sense. And so at the end there were so many wild threads going in all directions.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it was hard to put it all back together in the end.
So seeing a cohesive story that instead of throwing everything at the wall was like, we're only gonna show you what it's, we're gonna be really judicious. That's it. There we go.
Yeah. And I think that Russian Dolls had a little bit of that feel to it, like they wouldn't explain everything explicitly, and so you got a sense of, well, I'm missing something. But then in the end there were so many things you were missing from so many different people that then you were like, I can't even tie them back together because I'm not sure what was going on with that person and that person, and they're just all related some way in this big giant concept of heaven and hell and what the afterlife looks like. And it was just, it was hard to put everything together.
Okay.
And maybe one of our readers was like, wait, you didn't recognize that this was a retelling of the Parsifal story? Because it did have a quality of that, you know, Robin Williams movie, Fisher King.
Okay.
And so it had this Fisher King quality to it. It was like if you put the Fisher King and Groundhog Day together, that's what this series was. And so I was disappointed because it was well made, but not, I couldn't find the thought. I couldn't follow it. And I was like, okay, so maybe it was me and maybe other people really could follow it. As opposed to Moonlight, which was really well made. And coming back again to what we were talking about earlier, that who was this movie made for? I was thinking, I'm not sure this movie was made for me. Because there was a lot of things I just didn't understand. And I said, so maybe if I grew up in Liberty City or if I grew up around people who grew up in Liberty City, that I would have some kind of reference to what's going on. But there were a lot of instances where I just had no connection with what was going on. And I was like, I don't understand what's happening here or why it's happening. And so there was a lot of that. And so I was like, this clearly is not made for me. Which is one of the reasons I loved it. Because you could kind of get a gist of what was going on, but they weren't going to explain it to you. And I think that, you know, like Ta-Nehisi Coates and there's others that have come out recently and said, my job as a black person is not to explain to you what it means to be a black person. And I think this movie was kind of saying that. You know, this is a movie for black people. And, you know, and it may have been for gay, homosexual males, black. It may not have been. I'm not even sure it was geared towards that because all these other characters, like the guy on the street, you know, the corner boy, you know, we don't know his story. But I'm sure somebody was like, yeah, I know that. Or Kevin. We only have glimpses of his story. And he's clearly bisexual because he has a kid. And so I'm not sure it was specifically for gay black men. I was like, so much of the story didn't make sense to me because I didn't have reference for it. But it was so well done that I go, it wasn't for me, and it was beautiful. It was like ridiculously beautiful. So well thought through, so well made, so well acted. Every part of it was just off the charts.
And like so many of like, I think you can still in just like fall so much into like the emotional truths of what's happening. Yeah. That even if some of the, even those things that, yeah, are not made for you, are not explained to you, like it's still like a devastating, like my heart is still hurting by how tender that last, like those last moments are. Like, and just still feel that.
Oh, so
because
many.
Of how intense, like the you know, the, that those emotional truths of the movie are.
Oh, when Juan takes his food away from him. those just those big doughy eyes.
Yeah.
And you could just feel it. And even Juan is like, sorry, man, I won't do you like that, right? He could just feel how much it hurt him to take away his, you know, food from the fast food restaurant. Mm-hmm. And so I could easily give this movie, you know, 99,000 KBs. Uh-huh. I won't even mention the other movie.
Yeah, it doesn't deserve to be even mentioned.
But, you know, there's the other part of me was, this was hard to watch.
Yeah.
And so I could not take this onto my island because I could not watch this day after day.
Yeah.
Because it was hard to watch. And it's not like a perfect movie needs to be easy to watch. But it does, you know, like that's part of my personal criteria. I would have to be able to watch the movie again and again and again. And I could not do this with that movie because it was really hard to watch. And so I'm going to give this.
Okay.
I'm going to give this movie 89,215 KVs. And 10,000 of those that I did not give are just because it's a really hard movie. Mm-hmm. And that's a personal thing that is just difficult for me to watch this kind of movie again and again.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because I was thinking the same thing, right? I think that there's like a number of movies. There's a couple of, you know, I think we all have kind of personal criteria around, you know, especially if we're rating a movie, you know, of you could, I would say, yeah, people should 100% see this movie. And I love this movie. This is the second time I've seen it, but I'm probably not going to watch it again for a while because it is like, I mean, my heart is still hurting from the movie because of just how, like, how deeply the movie touched me, you know, and how much I felt what was happening there. And so it's this, yes, I think there's a couple of things that I like to think about when I'm rating the movie, which is there's one where, like, I like to think about, do I feel differently coming out of the movie than I did coming in? Like, how much did it, like, shift how I'm thinking and feeling? And I think a really successful movie, you come out and you're like, wow, what is the rest of the world? I was so involved in this world that they made, and I felt that so much with this. Like, it's hard to come out of it, and I still feel the kind of the emotional after effects of the movie because of how intense it is. And then at the same time, yes, I do think that there is like, I couldn't bring this on the island with me either if I only had 3 to 5 movies to bring with me. Yes, because it is such an intense, it's not a movie that you just rewatch and rewatch and rewatch. Yes, I was comparing it to one of the other movies that I would call this basically a perfect movie, just like To All the Boys I Loved Before is a perfect movie, which that one is immensely rewatchable. I could go watch it right now and be really happy. And again, that is a movie that I think was 100% made for me. And this movie, just like you said, was not made for me, but I loved this movie. And so I will give this movie... Oh, I don't really have anything that I watched before that affects this. I haven't really had time to watch things since we recorded the last episode. So I've been rewatching old episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which if you need some silliness in your life, if you're like, wow, I'm emotionally devastated after this, watch some episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because Andre Brower as the captain is... I think one of the great performances of our time.
Cool.
The way that he can deliver the silliest lines with his, like, gravitas, he's amazing. So I would give this 91,468 KBs. So I think it's nearly a perfect movie, and I took a little bit off because I just can't rewatch it all the time. It's just too much. So if you came here to hear any criticisms of Moonlight, well, we're not here for that. And I do want to shout out... Oh, I have two podcast shout-outs. If you watched Moonlight, if you loved Moonlight, if you want to have a little bit more context around Moonlight, I have some other podcasts that you need to listen to, which is the A24 podcast, which is the company that produced it, Brad Pitt's production company. I love that Brad Pitt is getting into the production game and he's bringing up people and he's looking for new voices. I love that. There's an A24 podcast, and the first episode is Greta Gerwig and Barry Jenkins talking about Lady Bird and Moonlight, and they just love on each other. other's movies, and they talk about all kinds of things, and it's a really fun episode to listen to of two filmmakers talking about two amazing movies. And then the other one is that there's a Fresh Air interview from a while back when this movie came out with both Barry Jenkins and the playwright and screenwriter. And Terry Gross talks to the two of them about kind of the context of writing, making the movie, talked about doing it in Liberty City, the parallels of their lives and the reflection of the mother, who we didn't really talk very much about, but they get much more in depth about like the parallels between they both had mothers, that there are reflections of their mothers in this character. And so it's a great interview, and if you want to listen to more and get more context around the movie, highly recommend both of those. So.
I'm glad you said that as we're finishing, because that was like my favorite line of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I hated my mother, but I miss her like hell now.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah. And just like with everything else, the mother is a really complex person too. She's not a totally tragic figure. She's not a villain character. She's a very complicated person as well. And you can totally see the thought that went into that character as well. Yeah.
And even in that line, your relationship with your mother is very complex. Hate him, but miss him. Yeah. And that's all. I don't need to say anything more.
You don't need to say anything more.
It's just, there it is.
Yeah. All right. Well, next episode, we're going to take a wild shift in tone again.
Okay, what are we watching
so
next?
So we've really run the gamut in this trilogy. I love it. We've got all kinds of different tones coming around here. So next episode, please join us for the, I think it was 2018 big budget film, gay love story rom-com, Love, Simon.
Okay.
Love, Simon. I do not know where. I assume it is very available to rent.
We were supposed to do our homework. And
we did not do our homework. But it was. It's not as cult filmy as any of the other ones. It was released in theaters last year, so I think it is very
rentable.
Very available and rentable.
Okay.
Yes.
And I have not seen it.
So we will get another prediction from you, because you have not seen Love, Simon.
And then we'll review that.
I will say it is very different from, it is not a Moonlight.
Okay.
So that's all I'll tell you. But okay. Please join us.
In two weeks
for Love, Simon.
All right.
And thanks for talking nonsense.
Thanks for talking nonsense.